Good morning. You're like, who are you? What happened to Chuck? Well, my name's John. I'm one of the pastors here, and I get the awesome privilege of sharing from Scripture this morning. So I hope you guys had a good 4th of July. Was it good? Yeah. Everybody stay cool? No. No, we didn't. Sorry. If you're brand new to Colossae, welcome. Something at Colossae we just really try deeply to do or to be is people who deeply love God and love people. And part of that reality is that we want to encounter Jesus in such a way that allows us to do that, to be that for people. And we've been in this series titled Encounters, trying to look at how Jesus interacts with humanity. And out of that place, we're hoping that we not just know stories better, and that we don't just fall in love with the words of the story, but that we actually step into it. And we embrace our own faith in that, and our own walk in that, and our own journey in that. I know everybody comes from different places, and you might be on different, if you will, places in the spectrum of following Jesus, but wherever you are, just know it's good to be with you, and we really want you to encounter Jesus today, this morning. Last week, we broke down the idea of two very significant words. I encourage you to listen to that podcast. I thought it was so good. Chuck brought it, and the two words that we talked about were follow me. Jesus interacts with the disciples and says, follow me. And in that principle or in that idea, follow me, we discovered had that universal sense in which it wasn't so much that we accept Jesus as much as Jesus is inviting us into his life, calling us to follow him, to become fishers of men, to follow him into the world, to love people, to love our city, to love our neighbors. And yet, I think sometimes the tension is for us when it comes to following Jesus or hearing those words, follow me, is that you know life is kind of hard. And actually, following Jesus isn't easy. Now, sometimes we think in our Christian faith, following Jesus is going to make our life easier. Certainly, it will make it rewarding and definitely purposeful. But it doesn't necessarily mean following Jesus is going to be easy. In fact, sometimes it's just plain difficult and hard. And to really take on those words, follow me, picking back a little bit on what was said last Sunday, we have to be able to look at follow me from the lens of grace. That it will be difficult, if not near impossible, to follow Jesus without a lens of grace. Some time ago, a good friend, asked me to just kind of meet with him and talk about his own journey. And big burly dude, man, 250 plus pounds, played football in college, that kind of thing. And as we were talking about his faith, I mean, this honestly, his presence is overwhelming. You know what I'm talking about? Like his biceps are like the size of my legs. I mean, the man is chiseled. I mean, he is truly man, right? Like steel. So I'm kind of talking to him. But as I would meet with him, it was always crazy for me to see him weep in front of me. Because he would literally say to me, why would God want somebody like me? Why would he want me after all the things that I've done? And it was just this paradoxical, if you will, picture, right? This person who was just so strong and had it figured out on the outside, but crumbling on the inside. You see, for him, and honestly, even for me, it is much easier just to obey, just to do what we're supposed to do, right and wrong. Like, it's not gray, I just do this because you say I do it, and right? But that becomes a grind after a while. And over time, you spiral and you give up. And so for him, obedience is easier. And his struggle wasn't obedience, it was grace. And I dare say, probably in this space, you need to hear the word grace. It's some of us need to hear the word grace. So I want to look at the words follow me, except with the, in the concept of grace. And I want to look at Peter again, looking at how he encounters grace. And if you have a Bible, turn to John 21. The context there is, the context of what's happened is that Jesus has died and he has risen. And as he's done this, he's become the risen Lord. He's no longer just the rabbi that everyone knows, not just a good man. No, he's actually the Lord. He's the King. He's the risen King. And you fast forward where Peter first and some of the disciples first met Jesus on the Sea of Galilee, and he comes back to them almost in that same environment. Peter's gone back home, and they're resuming kind of life, kind of in that stage where, what do I do now? Well, let's go back and let's go fishing. John chapter 21, it reads this way. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. And they said to him, we will go with you. They went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. And a long night, right? You're trying to get back to some semblance of rhythm. It's been a tough 3 or 4 days. You think you're going to fall back into the thing you're good at, and you're not good at it anymore. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? And the affection of Jesus coming out. And they answered him, no. And he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. He's the risen King. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work. Fishing naked, I don't know, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came into the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. And when they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place, with fish laid out on it, and bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. All right, so Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. Imagine them, just like, you know how like kids count like their candy after Halloween. Like, dude, 153 of them. Whoa, like, what do we do? I don't know. It's awesome. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. I love that. The King wants to have breakfast. And he should come down with all kinds of hammers and like all sorts of whiplashes, and he's serving and he's meeting them and making breakfast by a fire. Now, none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them. And so with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. You ever wonder why Jesus meets them in that space? I mean, you clearly get this picture of Jesus meeting them where they are. I mean, he's in Jerusalem, making his way all the way back to the Sea of Tiberias. Peter's at home in the daily grind of life. He doesn't meet them with these loud, thunderous chariots and fires and angels. No, he actually just meets them in person. He meets them while they're working. He meets them over conversation. He meets them where they are. And they begin to understand grace because that's where grace becomes real, where we are. And the daily grind of life. Sometimes I feel like we're trying to find him in big things, when actually he's in the everyday things. In your relationships, in our homes, and at work, with our colleagues on campus, with our friends, with people. A conversation that ensues, you know, over a meal. And part of the reason why I think he meets Peter and the disciples here is because I think they're hiding. Right, you know what I mean? Where we kind of cope with functionality. When things aren't working very well, what do? You go back to the thing you know how to do well. And you feel safe there, but they're not really safe. And it feels comfortable, and it feels like you can, right? Because now you start to go back to the things that to define your worth by what you do. And so sometimes dealing with stress, and in this situation, Peter's failure, who clearly failed Jesus, having denied him, never knew him, didn't follow through, would be coping by fishing. And sometimes I think Jesus meets us in those everyday things because that's where we're actually dealing with a lot of darkness. And I think it's fitting that John actually ends the gospel, his gospel account, that way, because he started it the same way. Let me just read a couple verses in John 1. Right? Just let me read them. Just listen. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, talking about Jesus as a creator. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Capture this. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And then he goes on to say this, and the Word became flesh. It became tangible. God became humanity and dwelt amongst us. And we have seen his glory. Glory as the only Son from the Father, full of what? Grace and truth. See, I think Jesus meets us where we are because in those places where we are, we're dealing with a lot of darkness. And for Peter, he's definitely dealing with failure. And what he wants Peter to experience in this dark state is his light. And that light is really grace. Grace. I think so often that's how Jesus wants to meet us. It really comes out in this conversation that he has with Peter in verse 15, right? There's this conversation that's going to change his life forever, a very defining conversation, right? Because Peter has completely hurt Jesus. He has really hurt Jesus. He has totally left him, abandoned him. You ever imagine what that was like, that awkward moment where they're eating a meal or just after a meal and they're trying to figure out how to reconcile this thing? How weird and odd that would have been? I was sitting in a restaurant just eating, and there was a couple who was fighting over during a meal. You ever seen that happen? Oh, it's awful. Like, you just know it's a disaster, right? And you know, and it's silent fighting, right? But they're not even saying anything and they're fighting, right? And so here, right, it's like this. Here's the table. Here's this woman, and here's this man, and I don't know anything about their story, but she's doing this, right? She's just kind of playing with her food. She's not really looking at him. And of course, he's like, I'm eating angrily. Yeah, I'm just going to stare at you. Come on, let's get this figured out, right? Just like, are you going to say something? And she's like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to do this and eat my food. And at this moment, and every dude knows what I'm talking about, she starts to, you know, just starts to cry, and the dude is paralyzed. He has no idea what he's going to do, right? And you can tell he's like, what do you expect him to say? Something like, hey, I'm super sorry. I'm a jerk. I don't know why I said what I said. I don't know why I did what I did, right? Or you expect her to say, are you sorry? You totally messed up. Whatever it is, right? You expect that kind of dialogue. At some point, you expect it. Well, when you get to this dialogue with Jesus, you expect Jesus to look at Peter and say, what happened? You expect Jesus, the king, to say, you screwed up. You expect him to say, you totally failed me. Are you sorry? But that's not the conversation. And that's not the issue. The issue is this: do you love me? And that's what he asks. Listen to the conversation that ensues in verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him again, feed my sheep. I don't know if you caught in that first part that where he says, do you love me more than these? Right, who are the these? They're the disciples. And clearly, Peter has struggled with this for a long time. I mean, he was the leader. I mean, his name is supposed to be the rock, Peter. That's what his name means. Jesus names him that. And you can imagine just the tense nature of that conversation. Do you love me more than the human approval of your colleagues, the other disciples? I mean, the very thing that got him into trouble and why he denied Jesus, right, was that he was worried of what other people were thinking. And so Jesus brings him back, not in some like, let me stick it to you, Peter, but like, let me bring you back to the beginning and let me ask you, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than what other people are thinking about you? And like a great leader and a compassionate leader, he regurgitates and says it over and over again. You know how sometimes you just need to hear it again and again, and someone's just got to lay it into you a couple times so you capture it? Well, Jesus goes three times. And I think matching the fact that Peter had denied Jesus three times. But what Peter realizes in this moment is as much as his sin has been so pervasive in his brokenness, in his failure, grace is just as pervasive. That in his inadequacy, God is more than enough. And so he experiences his grace. And he knows this. And he knows Jesus knows this. Because when he says in the third line here, when he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was what? He was grieved. There was this emotional thing that happened to him. And then he says, Lord, you know everything. Now, the word know there in the Greek is oida. Okay? That means as in head knowledge, as in facts. So he's literally looking at Jesus and says, you know all the facts. You were there. You know the story. You know what went down. You even predicted it. And then he says what? You know that I love you. Now, this word, you know I love you, is different than all the other knows up here. It actually is the word gnosko. And it means knowledge as an experience. Like, you know how Paul says, I want to know Christ and his sufferings, meaning I want to experience him. Peter's literally looking at Jesus and says, you know my love. You don't just know the story, but you know my love. You know where I've been. You know that I love you, but you also know that there are times that I fail you, but you know I love you. I think he's getting the reality that it won't be his love, right? Peter's love that defines his worth with God. It'll be God's worth that defines Peter's worth. It'll be God's love that defines him. And for the first time, Peter has to decide, as God's grace is so abundant in him, if he's going to step into grace or if he's going to let his failures and his shame and his brokenness continue to motivate him. And I say that he has a decision to make because it says here in John 21, or in 18, this prophetic statement. It says here, truly, truly, I say to you, Right? In other words, this is truth. The king is making a statement to Peter. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. Talking about how he was immature in the beginning stages of his faith. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. And I really believe he's talking about the Spirit of God leading him into the next phases of his life. And then listen to this parenthetical statement. He says, this he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. He literally looks at Peter and says, you're going to love me the way you've always wanted to love me. You're gonna do something that is unbelievable. You're gonna go to your own cross, and we know this to be true historically, because Peter does obey and follows through, even takes a cross, but takes the cross upside down, because he believes God's love and worth are far greater than his. And so he does it, and he's literally saying, Peter, you're gonna do this. Feed my sheep. Come on, let's go do this. It's grace. You got to step into this. But as these big, big wells of grace lead you into obedience and sacrificial love, you got to choose grace. You got to step into it. If you follow me and you take the invitation into my life, you got to take grace too. So he has to decide, is it going to be shame and his failure, or is it going to be grace that motivates him? That becomes this beautiful truth and the point of this whole thing, that Jesus meets us where we are so that grace is what compels us to be obedient. To follow him arduously, sacrificially. And so just for a moment, I want to pause and ask a couple of questions. It's kind of a reflection to help us step into this grace and to step into it in such a way that allows us to really live obedient lives. And here's the first question. Is your relationship with God motivated by shame or grace? Now, I imagine some of us are kind of like, well, how do I know if I'm in shame or how do I know if I'm in grace? Well, let me ask it this way. When you hear these words, do you love me? Do you experience shame? And what I mean by experiencing shame is, do you shrink back? Do you feel a sense of oppression? Do you feel guilt? Do you feel like you can't? And then you go into your OCD mode, kind of like how Peter was with fishing, right? Like, he's just coping functionally. To the point that you're comparing yourself to other people and their lives. I say that because in verse 20, let me read to you what Peter does right after this dialogue. He hasn't gotten it yet. He's still in process. It says this, Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John, following them, the one who had been reclining at the table close to him and had said, Lord, who is it that is going to betray you? Right, he's talking about the upper room discourse. He's talking about the Last Supper. So he's talking about John. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? What about John? And Jesus says to him, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Right? In other words, stop living in your brokenness and your failure, because now you can't stop but what? Compare yourself to every other human being. And you kind of wonder, why can't I be like that person? Or why can't I be like her or him? Or why can't I do this or that with my life? And so you're just constantly wallowing. And so you hear these words, do you love me? You go, I'm not enough. And then you even go one step further and you believe and you think you have to have all your stuff right before you actually can enter into the grace of God, which is the exact opposite of grace. That's shame. But is your relationship motivated by grace? What's grace? Well, when you hear these words, do you love me? You experience relief. Almost like a release. Like where it becomes inspirational. And you get pumped because now you realize something. that God uses mess to change the world. That he can take your story and your mistakes and redeem those mistakes, that your past doesn't somehow predict every single thing you do in the present or in the future. That God can use you still. That you are not in any way done. When you hear the words, "Do you love me?" do they cause you to move towards obedience? Or does it cause you to spiral back into failures and shame? And if you're like, "I don't know if that's true," well, look at Peter's life. Jesus says, "Hey, let's test this faith out. Come walk on the water with me." He's like, "Cannonball." And he's just sinking. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, "You lack so much faith." Right? Jesus is falling asleep. Right? Jesus is literally praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. It's like his last hour, really. It's this emotional distress. Mark says that he was bleeding, he was sweating blood, and all he asks the inner circle, including Peter, is what? "Hey, stay with me and pray with me." And Peter what? Falls asleep. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, "Hey man, couldn't you just stay awake for a little bit?" What does Jesus say to Peter when he says, "I got to go to the cross," and he calls him what? He says, "Satan, you're Satan, get away from me." How would you like to be called Satan by Jesus? And yet, even though he in the end still denies him, that he ever knew him, he's the one that will die for him and glorify him. Is your relationship with God motivated by shame, or is it grace? Here's the second question. Do you believe then Jesus can meet you where you are and extend grace to you? I think some of us don't believe that. You really don't. I think one of the things I've been hearing a lot as a response to this encounter series is so many have said to us, "We just don't feel like God's grace is for us," right? And they superimpose what they feel about themselves on God's beauty and glory, as if somehow we were defining that. But here's why that's, and forgive me, it's just super irrational. I don't know how else to explain it. It's a fact. God exists to express grace. And his grace is real. And it's for you. It's like this. I grew up in Portland. Born and raised. Born up on the hill at OHSU. So it doesn't get more Oregonian than that. And because I'm an Oregonian, I actually love the rain. Okay? And I know you're like, "Boo." But yeah. But I actually love the sun, too. And for 3 or 4 months, you know this, the sun comes out. And one of the things I love the most is that in the morning, I go out in my patio, which isn't really a patio, it's just like a big square. But I feel better when I call it a patio. And I grab my cup of coffee. And I sit in the crisp morning air. And I let the sun hit my face. And it feels warm. Now if I were to invite Aaron, you into that. Just invite you into that. And say, "Aaron, come sit down and enjoy the sun with me." And then all of you started to hear this conversation. And I said, I started to talk to the sun. The sunshine. I said, "I don't know if you exist." But not even that. "I don't even know if you exist to keep me warm. I don't know if that warmth is something I should have." So you know what? And I look at Aaron and I go, "I'm gonna step back and go back into my house. I'm gonna watch Aaron enjoy the sun. I'm just going to kind of wonder if that sunshine, that warmth is for me. If you were there, you would say there was something really wrong with that, right? Because who does that? The sun exists for what purpose? For you. And it's warm. And you don't question whether it's supposed to keep you warm. It keeps you warm. And so what do? You enjoy it. You step into it. You saturate yourself in it. You get energized by it. You move throughout your day in it. Do you believe that Jesus can meet you where you are and extend grace to you, not as some possibility, but as a fact? Do you, will you saturate, step into his grace? I pray you will. Jesus says through this incredible dialogue, and he meets us where we are, so that grace may continue to be the motivation for our obedience and our love. And I pray that you'll allow yourself to step into his grace, to follow him, to become fishers of men, to change the world, to love neighbors, to love people. In just a minute, we're going to take communion. And it is my favorite part of Sunday. And this is why communion matters, because some of you need to step into his grace, and you're like, give me the proof. Well, here it is. And so step into his grace. Take the bread that represents his body, dip it in the juice, the cup, and know that he loves you, and know that he loves you unconditionally, and know that he's redeeming all that you've gone through, and know that you can learn from failures and mistakes, and get up and be obedient and follow Jesus. But stay in that place of grace. Step into it. And as you do so, you declare the Lord's death until he comes. Leave this place then with the sense that God is really gracious towards me. So I'm going to pray for us. And when you feel ready, take grace. If you want to support the ministry, awesome. But definitely take grace. Take in Jesus and follow him. Let's pray.